All right. Welcome to Geopolitics in Conflict live. Good to see you guys. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, whatever part of the world you're in. We missed our viewers last week, Ross.
I know.
Yeah, we had to be out of town. It was a conference I had to go to. So anyway, we're glad to be back here. So we're going to be...
Well, we got a lot to talk about
today.
We'd like to thank you for watching. We'd like to thank you for subscribing. As you know, we're inching closer and closer
to 70 million.
To 70 million. We're inching. Well, maybe. Okay. Anyway, we can't encourage you enough to subscribe. We have a message that we really want the world to hear, and it has to do with keeping people informed so they can make intelligent decisions about their own lives. Yeah.
Well, indeed, we want to thank you for really, really your support. So here is the thing. If you have not subscribed yet, please do so right now, because you're subscribing to our channel help us move forward into the target number we would like to. Also, we want to let you know about our membership. You can check it out at geopoliticsinconflict.com. As a matter of fact, we do have a presentation scheduled today. Is that correct?
Yes, it's at 1 p.m. It's 2 hours.
We do have one right after this live stream in about 30 minutes after. We're going to have a live presentation for our members. So check that out and see what we offer into that.
Tell them what it's about.
So it's going to be the presentation, by the way. It's going to be about China-Russia relations, which specifically about President Putin and President Xi relationship. They do have a friendship that truly has not been disclosed openly in the West. So Russ and I were going to dig into this one.
We have some very bold predictions that we're going to make about the future of the China-Russia relationship. And we have a big section on implications for you, what their relationship actually means.
Yeah, in the idea of the focusing on the Russia-China relations, we're gonna delve deeper into this one here. So that's gonna be for our members. So, and also don't forget to follow us on TikTok, Instagram, and
Twitter.
Yes.
Speaking of Twitter, follow me personally on Twitter under my account DWalalou. And also follow Elizabeth, because we both from the same team basically. On Alchemy, is that correct?
Alchemy of E.
Yeah, and Alchemy.
It's on the screen.
Yes, it's right there on the screen, guys. If you can, so make sure you follow us on this. So we're good. So let's start with our
headlines.
What's going on?
Moscow's recent destruction of a satellite.
Oh, indeed, we did this one yesterday. Elizabeth and I did a conversation on breaking news on this. Well, why the significance of it? First of all, FYI, guys. The destruction of the satellite was a commercial satellite, not a military one. And but the implication is far than what you can even anticipate. Now, here's the thing that a lot of people do not understand or do not know. The U.S. has conducted similar tests before. As a matter of fact, it was one when the U.S. destroyed a satellite belonged to NRO, the National Reconnaissance Office. You know, that deals with the, you know, keeping an eye on everything else. You all know what it means. So the U.S. did conduct it some. Now, it's just the idea of Russia doing this at the same time when China developed the hypersonic.
Yeah.
At the same time when China is building its own space station. You can just see where it's going. So that's why we wanted to just highlight this one for you. What's next?
The Pentagon may have committed war crimes in Syria in 2019.
That was correct. It was a bombing that just came out now to the surface, as far as some reporting inside the Pentagon. That's one of the operations the Pentagon conducted targeted about 70 individuals, including children. Those are civilians. So, as a former military myself, I have one rule: children and women out of limit. You know, just kind of, I know war can be very ugly. It is ugly. And this is what we always say. We're trying to promote peace on this platform here in understanding the ramifications. God forbid if ever a war between China and the United States erupts.
Oh,
so
it'd be horrible beyond imagination.
Exactly. So war is ugly, but anyway, there will be some now reports coming out, and they need to be investigated. And if whoever gave the order violate the law, they should be brought to justice. Simple as it is. Just because you are in a war doesn't mean you just do whatever.
Inexcusable behavior.
No,
absolutely.
No, it's not.
This is a really interesting one.
Yeah.
There was a military parade in Afghanistan where they featured U.S. weapons and Russian helicopters.
Well, that was very interesting about that. The current government in Afghanistan decided to conduct a military parade. What was interesting is about the equipment that was on display. And you got the Russians' helicopter near the U.S. tanks or vice versa. I mean, it just was funny and interesting. The U.S. and Russia's weapon on the same parade. I found that very, very weird and ironic. So,
I really wonder how much value is in the U.S. weapons and so on was left behind. Don't have an answer, but must have been billions.
I have an answer to
Do
that.
Do you really?
Yeah, it's over a billion. Over a billion of weapons that still. So it makes you just wonder how the decision was reached to leave this kind of operational weapons behind. Let alone we destroyed some of the weapons on our way out.
Here's one I find just absolutely fascinating.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we've talked about the Belt and Road Initiative.
Uh-huh.
The U.S. wants to race to the top on Africa infrastructure amid China's competition, says Blinken.
Oh, yeah. Currently, the Secretary of State, Blinken, is in Africa, and he met with, as a matter of fact, he met with, and I have the name of the guy right here in front of me. His name is the Nigerian Vice President, Yemi Osinbajo. So anyway, the reason why I met with him, because Blinken is saying what the U.S. now is committed to helping democracies in Africa. I was like, come on, let's be real here. Africa has been forgotten for decades. It was now the U.S. is interested because China is there and Russia is there. But Nigeria, it's not taking the bait from the Americans, even though Anthony Blinken, the Secretary of State, promised that the U.S. would provide $2.1 billion in assistance. China is offering $3.2 billion in assistance. Those are loans assistance for infrastructure. As a matter of fact, what they're going to be building, and I have some info that I found here as to what they're going to be offering into this. And I'd like to share it with you guys. It's the idea of what the Chinese are they going to be doing. What they're going to be doing is they're going to build infrastructure pertaining to roads, of course.
Yeah.
Because if you want a good economy, you need to have good roads. Rail, if you want to move goods around. Gas pipelines, because as you know,
Nigeria
is one of the OPEC members anyway. So, and all this, and the U.S. is saying, well, no, those are that trap. You remember when our guest Hussein Askari explained this? That is not true.
It's pure hype, and it's not true at all.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, the Chinese have been more than flexible with the debts that countries have accrued with them.
Exactly.
And there's also the thing of who's believable. China has a reputation of we say it, we do it.
Exactly. Yeah.
And after the Afghanistan fiasco, that became really questionable.
And speaking of China, while we are on this topic of infrastructure, we're going to talk about this. We're going to let you guys know, just we are working on putting the information together regarding the China's projects in Cuba.
Oh, is that fascinating?
Yeah, because Cuba is going to become part of the BRI. So who knows? We might have our guest Hussein back. He certainly has the info for that. So we're going to share that with you.
Okay. Last big one for the day, although
there could be
20 more.
Oh, of course.
The crash of the most powerful plane in the world. Britain races to recover the F-35 and protect its secrets.
Indeed. I just came across this morning. It was not here in the West. I found, you know, I have my sources where I can get the info and all that. The F-35 crashed, you know.
Yeah.
And where did it crash? It crashed on the coast of Egypt in certain terrain there. You know, the Brits are racing against time to get to the wreckage.
Yeah.
Because they are afraid that the Russians might get their hands on it. And why is that? It's important because F-35s are equipped with certain type of radars that can detect detect whatever 1 mile underwater.
Oh my!
That's how far. So, as a matter of fact, the U.S. now is going to be assisting the Brits because the Brits don't have enough equipments to manage this kind of stuff. So the U.S. is getting into this. But this one is about the quality of the planes because Russia has the Su-35s that they are very advanced. Well, they are very, very maneuverable. We're not going to get into all this, but just to highlight to you the race now that Britain is doing to avoid or prevent Russians from ever getting their hands on those parts. So,
well, what do you think? Could we turn to our major topic today?
Certainly. I'm sure our viewers will want to know. And we can, as we always do, we'll discuss for about 20 minutes or so and open up the floor for you guys for questions, whatever that might be. And as always, Stefan, we want to thank you very much. By the way, Russ, I did the breaking news with Elizabeth last night, and there were some of our viewers, they sent us some super stickers. So we want to thank all of you guys, no exception, all of you. So your support means a lot to us, and this is why, the idea of, here's the thing, and I'm going to share this with you guys. Just to let you know, the last 26 days, we had almost about 1 million views on our channel. And we don't understand why that didn't translate into subscribers.
Right.
So if you can help us out, we'd like to, who knows, maybe we start with the first 1 million.
Okay.
That would
okay.
Be good. So That'd we be thank good. You for that. So as we said, we're going to do about 20 minutes and open up the floor for your questions. And like always, guys, just make sure you put questions so we know it's a question, not a statement, and so forth.
This week,
yeah,
virtual conference between President Biden and President Xi. Wow.
Indeed, that was a virtual, they called it a virtual summit. We did the breaking news on it, but today we're going to go in a little bit more detail. They called it a virtual summit. I will call it a virtual imaginary summit. It's because it was, literally the hypes of, but this is also what's important, Ross, is the usage of the words, of the language.
Oh boy, did we break that down.
Exactly. So to me, it was not a summit. It was the idea when you have a summit that you only focus in on, because guess what? When I tweeted on it on Monday, before the call took place the next day, the next day on Tuesday early, my thinking was, well, that's great. This is now the opportunity for the United States to really tell China, hey, we have some issues. How about if we figure out a way to sit down and tackle one issue at a time? That was what I was hoping for, thinking that President Biden is going to approach it that way.
Guess what? He didn't do that.
Yeah, because what was the conversation of? Focused on Taiwan. The first word coming out of President Biden's mouth was, we warn China on Taiwan. Is that how you want to start a dialogue, per se, or a cooperation if you are to solve problems?
I was really impressed with how President Xi handled this, because I think that China has come to expect this kind of denial of the real issues going on, and it's going to distraction of Taiwan, Hong Kong. And we all know there's a big backstory in all of those things, as opposed to let's get on with real issues that we can work on and solve together.
Yeah. You will think, for example, like the idea of trade.
Yes.
That would be, if I were advising the president, the United States president, I'll say, sir, the first thing you're going to have to do, let's not show this posturing of aggressiveness and so forth. Let's talk, first of all, identify what the issues are. Trade is the first one. Why? Because we in the United States noticing the impact of that. Gas prices, inflation, people are living paycheck to paycheck. The holiday is coming. I mean, that would be the first issue I will address with China.
You and I have talked about this privately. I don't know if we've done it on air or not. Thanksgiving meal this year, guess what percentage higher it is cost-wise than it was in 2020? 20% higher.
Wow. Well, that's a lot.
That's a lot.
That is a lot. That is a lot for an average family.
Oh.
Yeah. So right. That will be the first thing. So instead, the White House decided to start with warnings about Taiwan. Well, President Xi didn't hold back. His answer was, you know, don't play with fire because you might get burned.
Yeah.
And rightly so. But to me, what it says, Russ, and again, I'm putting my analyst hat on, even though I have the... yeah.
The state of Fort
Hatton. Exactly. But I'm putting my analyst hat and look at it in a way that China's respond that way by saying to the American president, you'll be careful with playing with fire because you might get burned. It tells me right there that geopolitical shift has occurred, that China now is approaching dealing with the United States on an equal footing. That's two. And third, that the geopolitical table, the seats at the geopolitical table have been rearranged.
Oh, yeah. You know, something to always keep in mind, and we talk about this fairly often, the Chinese language is a contextual language, and English is not. For example, we say, let's talk. Okay, that's the American way of doing it. But the Chinese way would be something more like, well, here we are sitting here, and the topic is this, and the people present are this. Now, let's talk. Notice that they do context, context, context to give you a whole lot more information. The context here, as we say over and over again, is the 100 years of humiliation.
Yeah.
And just to refresh everyone's recollection of that, that is when the powers of the world came together and divided up China.
China. That's great.
And just and humiliated the people and took terrible advantage of them as if they were colonizing a culture that had been around for 5,000 years.
Exactly. And that's why I didn't quite understand, you know, who was advising the president and why? Why would you want to approach this instead of figuring out a way to work, you know, with China, not having that aggressive posture and so forth, because we are feeling the pinch, we, the citizens, feeling the pinch of those tensions between the United States and Russia, mainly in the economic sphere.
Yes.
Yeah. Let alone the geopolitical implication of something like that. Why ratchet tensions?
Well, you know, when President Xi was setting the stage for this thing, he said, clearly, let's come together and work on mutual problems between our economies. And by the way, we've got other things that affect all of humanity. That's not where Biden took it.
Yeah. And I was very surprised and shocked. Apparently, when President Biden was, when candidate Biden was running for office, one of the things he mentioned that he will work with China, figure out. And all of a sudden, I'm finding it very ironic and surprised that he maintained the tariffs they were imposed in 2018. Even back then, when the tariffs were imposed, I argued in one of my writing that, you know, this is not going to bode well in the long term. And it's not going to harm China more than it will harm us, because we are not a producing nation. We are a consuming nation. We consume more than we produce.
Something that's not obvious about tariffs is, who pays the tariff?
Us.
We pay the tariff. Us. If we want the product, we have to pay a higher price for it.
Yeah.
Now, the assumption is that it's going to lower demand. Well,
yeah.
Maybe it did, maybe it didn't. But what we know is, we, the American people, if we want the products, we pay more for them.
Exactly. So that becomes the question of, okay, was the phone call did the phone call yield any positive outcome? And the answer for me personally is no. Let's not sugarcoat it. The media saying, we pressed China on human rights and this and that. Come on. Come on. That's like exactly what they are saying right now. What Tony Blinken, the Secretary of State, saying in Nigeria about what we wanted to help Africa democracies. So when we conduct our summit next month, because next month the U.S. is going to be holding the democracy summit on democracy. I mean, come on. Let's get real here. You know, the administration is playing with this kind of stuff. When it comes down to the livelihood of the American people, it just doesn't. That's why the phone call, the moment I read up a little bit on the transcript of what's going on with that, I was like, okay, this is going nowhere. Because what the United States, the hard time that it's having right now, it's not willing to accept that it cannot dictate the terms to China anymore. They cannot tell China what to do anymore. Those days are gone.
Denial reigns supreme in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
The inability of the people who are currently there to say, look, China has arrived. Economically, they arguably they're the biggest economy in the world.
That's true. Pardon me. And the idea of, you know, why not take this opportunity of this phone call and say, hey, at least let's recognize we do have differences, you know.
Exactly.
Let's pick up a list of those topics. How about if we do another call in a month from now, or maybe a meeting if we come to an agreement, and let's tackle one issue at a time to find the common ground where we can work together rather than, I mean, I was even shocked and surprised to learn that the United States is asking oil from China because of what we have here. I know it's, you know, we laugh at this because, you know, we're not laughing, but it's sad that it came to the point where, because it defies logic, Ross. How can I come to you, insult you and say, hey, I need your help? That just doesn't make sense.
Is it any wonder that we see the foreign ministry of China standing up so firm?
And rightly so.
Exactly.
To me, that's what I will do. You know, you come and insult me and expect me to help you? That just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. But again, it falls back to that idea of the willingness in the West to accept this geopolitical shift that is already... It happened.
It's a fair complete. It's done.
Yeah.
It's already done there.
We in the West pretending that it's not. We don't dictate the terms anymore. That just, it's a fair complete.
Exactly.
Let's just accept the reality and figure out how to coexist within the new system. It's what I always call the new global order. That's just simple as it is.
You know, I actually had a glimmer of hope for this meeting.
I was hoping to.
And the reason is that Biden has spent, when he was vice president, he spent so much time with Vice President Xi.
Yeah.
And they claimed friendship. Well, this didn't look like a friendly meeting.
It didn't look like it, yeah. And to me, if you are to claim friendship, that means you can talk honestly. You know,
right.
We might disagree. We don't have to. You and I, we have that. I don't agree with you 100%. You don't agree with me 100%.
And we don't even want that.
Yeah, you don't want that. You're absolutely correct. Because that's those differences, it's where the opportunity of new ideas comes in.
Exactly.
So, and I didn't quite understand, okay, here is this opportunity of this phone call. Well, you wonder why the Chinese didn't want to meet with the Americans before face-to-face. Especially after that, you remember the one video we did in about Alaska meeting?
I'm just gonna reference.
Yeah.
Anchorage 2.0.
Exactly, Ross.
I mean, and that was dramatically insulting.
The
Chinese.
Yeah, you don't
start a meeting by calling them a batch of bad names.
Yeah, you don't do that. And to me, that's lack of, as I always say, some of us. I shall not generalize. Of course, I shall not generalize. Not all of us in the West are poor readers of history, but the majority of us are. You will think in terms of, you know, this ratcheting up of tensions regarding Taiwan, where it's going to lead to. World War One.
Oh, perfect example.
Yeah. Well, you know more about this one, Ross, about World War One, the alliances.
Yeah, basically, the in 1900, they were the powers that be in Europe saying, we're not forming alliances because we know where this leads. Leads to war.
Exactly.
Okay, those regimes got old, passed on, and then the new regime said, no, we need to have alliances. So with the assassination of one petty nobleman, World War I started with untold tragedy.
Exactly.
Leading to, because if a bullet's fired, now these other people are already lined up to start the war against who?
Yeah.
I mean, it's absurd. And of course, that led to World War II. And then we've seen all the things that came out of that.
Exactly.
Millions upon millions of people dead.
You're absolutely correct, Ross. And this is where my fear is. As an analyst, I think in terms of long term. Right. I am literally, as I sit here sharing this with you guys, I kid you not. I am truly thinking in the next 30 years, 35, where things are going to be. I don't have to think about next year. Or I'm thinking about the next 20, 25, 30 years. And my fear, because this is where I learned from history.
Yeah.
There is a reason why we say history repeats itself.
Because it does. Yeah.
This ratcheting up of tensions about Taiwan, the buildup of these alliances, AUKUS and Quad and all that, it's nothing but an ingredient for a disaster in the making.
It's the makings of World War I, or we're going to call it World War III.
Yeah.
I mean, these things are absurd when you look at them. Put them under a microscope and they're just ridiculous.
Yeah. And we have to say it the way it is. Of course, we hope that we'll never get to that. That is the reason why we are talking about these issues, to highlight the importance of peaceful coexistence. And this is why we decided to address this issue today, because whoever, let's say hypothetically, someone from the administration is watching this video. So if you are, happen to be from the administration watching this video, make sure the advisors to the president advise him the right way. Not about this posturing stuff, but about finding a common ground where we can sit down on a table with the Chinese and have a conversation where we can respect their interest and they will respect our interest.
And that's what she was actually requesting. Just respect us.
Exactly. And that's not because that's, in international diplomacy or international relations, whatever you want to call it, interests matters.
Oh, yeah.
This is the whole idea of why foreign policy exists in the first place. But when you start having an ambiguous foreign policy, a failed one.
Which we have.
Yeah. Well, here is the thing with this call.
Yeah.
I'll tell you this. Pertaining to Taiwan, of course. When the call was made, President Biden saying to China, Taiwan, 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 this. The next day, you know what President Biden said?
What?
Oh, we maintain our ambiguous policy towards Taiwan.
He said that directly
because the ambiguity of the U.S. policy regarding Taiwan, that's been in the works since way back.
Oh, since the days of Chiang Kai-shek.
Yeah, well, and after that, especially when Nixon made the deal with the Chinese later on and opened up, Henry Kissinger talked and all that stuff, they came to that agreement that rather the United States within the government, the agreement they reached was we're going to maintain a policy of ambiguity. Well, how can you, here is my argument, how can you say one thing and the next day you come and contradict that?
Which is happening. We're seeing almost on a daily basis.
Yeah. What kind of message is he sending? That's contradiction right there. Which tells the other party, the Chinese in this case, how can you trust the Americans?
As I've been looking at this, I started to suspect that what the United States really wants is for nothing to happen. For President Tsai to not declare independence. Of Taiwan.
Yeah, yeah.
And have the Chinese Communist Party government take no military action. Just let the thing ride for a while. But that's my suspicion. I don't know that.
Yeah. Well, my thinking is, Russ, I am thinking in terms, as I said, I think long term, but also I am thinking also China is holding back till after the Olympics. And you're going to see a different approach altogether.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You're going to be seeing most likely, I'm not talking about military action. No. We're talking about you're going to see a more assertive China, far more than what you see today. Because remember, the Olympics are it's a global event. And so, even though the U.S. is thinking, well, we're going to boycott the Olympics diplomatic representation. That doesn't mean, guys, by the way, when the U.S. mentioned about boycotting the Olympics, it does not mean they are not going to send the athletes. They're going to send the athletes, but the representation is always made by a diplomatic or high-ranking official. Sometimes the vice president attends, sometimes some high-ranking of the government.
Yeah.
The U.S. is not going to do that. They're saying they are not doing that. The decision has not been made yet. It's going to be made by the end of this month, and we're going to keep an eye on that one. But I always argue, why conflict sport with politics? Why don't you keep them separate? Because when you start managing things like this, that's you're showing your weakness. That's how weak your foreign policy is. When you couldn't manage the relationship that way, you're going to start going that direction. We saw that in 1972.
Right.
Of course, that was, some say it was justified because of the violence that took place. And we saw it during the 80s when the U.S. boycotted the Russian Olympics because of the, when Russia went into Afghanistan to assist the local government. Of course, we the term that's been used, invasion of Afghanistan.
Yeah.
Well, actually, it was more than, I wrote about it in the book. I detailed the whole history of that part of the conflict. You know, there was a government inside Kabul at the time that the Soviet Union at the time wanted to support.
Yeah.
So you can look at it as an invasion. You can look at it as a support or whatever you want to call it. So, and this is why the idea of boycotting the Olympics, but China's going to think of it in these terms of, because its image on the global stage, then you're not going to see any conflict erupts. You're not going to see any major undertaking by China. You're not going to see anything till after the Olympics. That's my prediction.
Well, it's coming soon. It's just next year.
Yeah, yeah. The other dimension to all this, just quickly before, is it time to do the question?
Yes, it is.
Okay, I'll add one more thing, Ross, before we open the floor for our viewers for questions. The other thing that I see about this call is the idea of the dynamics that are taking place in space. With China moving forward. So sometimes when you create tensions in certain parts, any country involved will have to allocate or divert some of its resources to deal with that issue. Yeah. Because let's say it the way it is, guys. Space is another dimension where we're going to see a major competition between the United States and China.
Matter of fact, when we do our members only presentation in an hour, we're going to discuss that.
Oh, we're going to detail that, especially with the Russian
destruction
of the satellite and why that is and all that. So that's for when we do the membership. So, that's all I could think about what's going on for the phone call. It was a failure. I'll say it straightforward. Advisors to the president need to think twice.
Oh, or three times.
Oh, we want to thank. Thank that Juice 911. Thank you very much for your super sticker. We truly, truly appreciate it. I think it is time for us to
let's get some questions.
Yeah, let's open up the floor for your questions, guys, and we'll just have a conversation here. So,
is that Ariel?
Indeed, Ariel.
Do you think the U.S. intention to boycott the Beijing Winter Games has something to do to delay the launch of the digital yuan? By the way, good to see you both again.
Good to see you, Ariel, as well. That is a possibility, but it's not. It has been a conversation way back about the China launching the digital yuan after the Olympics. Based on my sources that I talked to, people who know quite a great deal about this. They said, if you see that, you're going to see it after the Olympics. And well, right after the Olympics. Why? Because China will have a better opportunity with the global stage being there. And that's where they will do that. So that's the, but the reason why the U.S. doing, not 100% just because of that. So next question would be, can you see that, Russ?
Yeah.
Yeah, Ethan.
Ethan Wu. Why is the U.S. having oil shortage? we got to address that. U.S. invaded oil-rich Iraq, and the oil fields of Syria are also guarded by U.S. troops. The U.S. troops are not in these countries for nothing, right?
Yeah. Good to see you here, by the way. And that is a great question.
Oh, it is.
That one falls into the eco-strategic or geostrategic sector or area of what's going on. It is an interesting question. The shortage we have, it has nothing to do with what we can produce. We can produce a lot of oil if we want to. It's what goes behind the scenes, which most Americans do not understand. As I argued before, knowing what I know, because I used to work in Washington, D.C. for over 15 years. So you kind of learn how things are or work. The lobbyists that for the energy, the companies here, because they want to see prices. As a matter of fact, President Biden now launched, requested from FCC to conduct an investigation in price gouging.
Oh.
For two main companies, Exxon and Chevron.
Okay.
And that tells you, they put in profit before the welfare of the American people. Second thing is, why the administration is not tapping into the strategic petroleum reserve?
Isn't that a good question?
Yeah. And third one, where are the friends, OPEC friends, like Saudis, that we send our own troops to die for the monarchy, whatever you want to call it. So, and when President Biden, which asked them, by the way, 3 times.
Did they ever respond?
No.
They never even responded. Never
So the shortage in itself, it has to do with the domestic politics, you know, and this is where shame on those politicians that are allowing this, because I'll tell you this, guys, some Americans who live paycheck to paycheck are suffering economically. I have students, Ross, in my class, you know, the first thing when we come in, they said, Dr. Walalu, guess what? I said, what is it? I always ask them about what's going on and all that. And he said, I just filled up my truck. It cost me almost $95.
Oh.
$95. Those guys are just students. You know, they're still working through life to get to, you know, for the U.S. not to. So that is the reason why. So and we hope they can sort it out quickly. Boone. There is Boone. Good to see you, Boone.
Hi, guys. Maybe I'm too naive. I don't think so, Boone. But is there any reason why countries want to be number one? What actual benefit does it? Oh, this is a great question. What actual benefit does it confer? Sorry if the question is too naive. I don't think it's too naive at all.
No, it's not naive, Boone. That's a great question. Good to see you, by the way. And thank you for, you know, Boone is staying up late to watch this one. Because I know
thank you for staying up late.
So, no, it's not. Because here is, we take the example of the United States, you know. Why the U.S. is not going to accept this change to the political landscape? Because it's going to remove it from top spot. What top spot comes with what? It comes with political influence.
Yeah.
Exerting political influence on other countries. It's exactly what now the United States is doing with some countries regarding, I just read about it this morning, warning some countries if they don't side with the U.S., they're going to suffer some sanctions or something like that. I mean, that's the whole reason for it.
Yeah.
Second thing is, when you are on the top spot, assuming you want to do that, which the United States did with the monetary aspect, because if you control the financial market,
right,
you're controlling the world economy to a degree. That was the whole reason for why Bretton Woods system was created. So I do believe in the case of China, there's the argument in the West saying China is after global dominance. And I don't think so.
Well, President Xi actually denies that they want that position.
Yeah, because it comes with cost.
Yeah.
We have over 750 bases around the world. You know how much it costs to manage that?
Billions.
Yeah. And this is why, you know, that's the reason why some countries wants to be number one. But which country now wants to be number one? None except the U.S. So.
Pardon me if I don't get this wrong. Tamaputra, question. Pentagon officials post a warning that soaring inflation costs are becoming a military readiness issue. Oh, well. Will this, the sign, is this a sign of geopolitical shift or just Pentagon way to get more funds?
Now, I will go with the latter personally.
Yeah.
It's because sometimes that's like no difference. It's no different than what the report the Pentagon released regarding China's nuclear threat. And if you know how to read the reports coming out of the Pentagon or State Department for that matter, the language that is used, usually certain keywords will be used, like word threat,
yeah,
like word global order, like words of hegemony, like words of dominance. And those are the words we are hearing more and more. As I read some, you know, articles, I have to keep up with that stuff. So the Pentagon argument for this is nothing but to say, well, we got to make sure we allocate enough funding for.
And let's do it by scaring everybody.
Yeah.
Using these nominalizations that really don't mean anything.
No. But also you need to understand that in a few months, we're going to have midterm elections in Congress. And that's usually determine who's going to control Congress. And as we all know, who controls Congress controls the policies.
Yes.
That's usually how it works in American system. So, no, it's just hypes. Of course, they're going to say that. What they're not going to say is, well, maybe high prices are going to impact the welfare of the American people.
Yeah.
They're not going to say that. So, let's say next question. Salo Wolf. Good to see you, Salo Wolf. Question says, can you share your views on what the stance of the United States and China are in regard to the issue between Algeria and Morocco? Thank you.
Oh,
that is good
question for you.
Well, that is going on in, yes, the reason being because Morocco and Algeria, they got diplomatic ties. They got into, of course, the history goes beyond this. It goes back to 1975. When Morocco conducted the what they call the Green March to take over the certain areas in the desert. You know, there is a reason for that, because that area of the desert is rich in oil. Of course, and Algeria is one of the top producers of oil as well. It's an OPEC member. But this one, the China presence in this, it's very interesting, because China wanted to do smart cities in Tangier, which is one of the city up north, near the Gibraltar. But the Chinese wanted to ask for a percentage of that. And the Royal Palace in Morocco said no. They turned them down. I don't know. Maybe they got pressured from the U.S., whatever. But that's not because of that. It's because also Algeria is a client of Russia. So all the weapons that Algeria get them from Russia. But now Algeria is getting some from China.
Okay.
So this is where that issue is concerned. So the U.S. is supporting Morocco. Russia and China are supporting Algeria. You take into consideration next door in Libya, what's going on.
Oh, chaos.
And you take also what's going on in Tunisia with this so-called democracy or whatever that is. You know, and you can just see North Africa is not as stable as you may think, you know. Egypt is a different story altogether, because we're the one who supported the coup of the military in Egypt. Anyway, we gave it our blessings. So, yeah, that's where so tensions between Morocco and Algeria is going to persist for some time to come. They never see eye to eye regarding that issue of the desert. So,
Tanya Wan Chen. Question for both of you gentlemen. Would the U.S. lift most of the tariffs wars to ease inflation in the U.S.? And would it affect the inflation on other countries as well?
Do you mean lift tariffs on
on some things?
If you mean on China, I don't see that happening. No, right now. Because they will, the president is under, the U.S. president is under pressure to maintain those tariffs, you know. Once you understand how domestic politics works in the U.S., the president will have to go with whatever he or she is told to go the direction and so
especially
forth.
Especially this president.
Yeah, but lifting the tariffs on China, I don't see that happening. Of course, if those tariffs are lifted, that's going to change the equation, economically speaking, and it will contribute to reduction in inflation. And this is why the government, we released a video yesterday about how the government is lying to people about inflation. It's because what the government is saying, and when I say government, I'm referring to the Treasury and I'm referring to the Federal Reserve. You know, those two entities that controls the financial market here in the U.S. and around the world for that matter. So what they are saying, they're using one key term. And you know what the key term, Ross?
What is it?
Transitory. If you go back about 4 or 5 months, 6 months ago, and you look at all the press releases from the White House, all the press releases from the media, you know, you see the keyword transitory and all they're saying, even Secretary of Treasury, she's saying, oh, it's a transitory, by next quarter, inflation will go down.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, which is not true. This saying is only 2%. Currently, inflation is at 6.2. You know, till you remove the tariffs, nothing's going to change. And even with the printing of money, is making matter even worse. Because how much can you be printing? Of course, this is one of the advantages having to you have your currency as a global reserve. But printing money, you know, we're going to have to pay for it one way or another.
Well, we're paying for it right now, exactly, with higher prices.
Exactly. All right, next question.
Miguel Mankov. How do you think the media and propaganda machines in Western nations, like AUKUS, so expertly avoid the race question when talking foreign policy about China, especially in the age of wokeness?
Yeah, they're not gonna, the race issues and all that won't come up in, they're not gonna, it's not a priority to them. So, and you're absolutely right in your question. It touches on a key issue that, you know, we need to address it here for us in the US first.
Oh, yeah.
Before we go telling other countries about human rights and this and that. And you can, as I always say, what you do versus what you say.
Yeah.
They're two separate things. Wasn't he? Well, who was the philosopher from Greece that said, if you want to know about a man's character, watch what he does. And I'll forget the name, but that's exactly what it is. If you want to learn about how a country behaves, watch what the country does. You know, and for us in the US, we can't be talking about these human rights in China and all this. Well, how about human rights in Yemen?
Yeah.
Yeah. How about human rights in Sudan? How about human rights in Egypt? How about human rights in Bahrain when you have now prisoners?
Human rights in Detroit?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it just goes on and on.
We
got
the
hypocrisy
issues.
Hypocrisy is awful.
As always, I'm a believer that, you know, foreign policy starts at home.
Yeah.
Fix your home first before you tell others, well, you need to have your house in order. Well, get your house first in order, then tell others if they need an assistance with you helping them to make their house in order.
Roz Gaming, what do you think about the
Tigray conflict in Ethiopia. Yeah. Once again, this is just touch back on what we just said. Now the UN is saying there are war crimes being committed. Well, wait a minute. What about the war crimes committed in Yemen?
Yeah.
With our weapons. What about what the US did in Syria in 2019 by killing those 70 civilians that have nothing to do with fighting the Americans, whatever? I mean, let's be fair and let's be right. If we are to call ourselves the beacon of democracy, then show it.
Yeah.
You can't just be saying this. And so in Tigray, now they are realizing that the issue is going to get far bigger because the U.S. is nervous about losing Ethiopia as a support. Why? It's because Ethiopia is next door to some other in east of Africa. East of Africa has the access to the
oil,
but also has the access to the water.
Oh, yeah.
You know, this is why you have Djibouti, for example. We have a base in Djibouti. China is in Djibouti. Russia is in Sudan. You can see where this is going. So we kind of just cherry picking where the issues. Yeah, and it's not supposed to be that way. You call spade a spade. Doesn't matter where. Why aren't we saying, for example, as I go back to United Arab Emirates putting prisoners, you know, what about those individuals in prison that have no due process whatsoever?
Right.
Where is justice? I mean, to me, if you are to call yourself a beacon of hope, a beacon of democracy, then act like it. You know, act like it. Show the world that you are truly an example of what that leadership is all about, what that democracy is all about, what that right is all about, and so forth. But you can't be telling countries you need to do A, B, C, and D, and you're not doing it yourself. It just doesn't make sense.
Okay, next question. Mike Barber. Question. Do you believe the U.S. has its hands in the issues currently happening in Sudan? Again, is this part of a broader destabilization destabilize African policy as China is actively working across the continent.
Thanks for being here, Mike. Mike, by the way, he posts a lot of comments on our videos. So thank you, Mike, for that. A great question. And the short answer is yes. Let me explain a few things. You know, we had a video one time way back when we talked about Russia establishing a base in Sudan. You know, I knew back then that's not going to settle well with the U.S. Why? It's because of the competition, that the geopolitical one, that is, that's taking place between major powers. Well, Russia and China have always been in Africa because the U.S. never took an interest.
Yeah.
Now, all of a sudden, the U.S. is interested in helping democracies in Africa. Well, Sudan is one of those countries. Sudan is an interesting country in the sense of how it's always been run historically. The military had always had the upper hand. So now the U.S. is saying, well, no, you have to bring the civilian government back, whatever. The military is not going to have it. And also, Sudan's going to be have to think into Sudan, by the way, is a very wealthy nation when it comes down to oil. But you don't see that because of the corruption.
Oh.
Same thing with Nigeria, for example. Those countries in Africa, they are huge potentials with them if they can just get rid of the damn corruption. That's usually where the issue is. So the answer, Mike, is yes. That's the U.S. won't want to see. China has already been there. China's, as a matter of fact, all the infrastructure in Sudan.
Yeah.
Who built it?
China.
China.
All right.
Yeah. So that's why you're not gonna. You're always gonna see some intervention from the U.S. behind the scenes to ensure that things don't work out, and that's why the U.S. won't threaten some countries in Africa if they ever work with China. As a matter of fact, even Nigeria was one of those. Yeah. So.
Okay. Next question. Leslie Wu. Could the U.S. and West attitude be described as superiority complex?
Well, you answered that one, Russ. That's psychology. That's your area.
I really like the concept of denial as opposed to superiority complex, although superiority complex does work.
Mm-hmm.
When they say we're better than you, we know more than you, you are less than us, and we expect you to bow to us, that certainly is superiority, and it's to say it's harmful understates the severity of that. But the answer is absolutely yes.
Wow, wow, yeah, and that's to me. You know, I don't believe in superiority. You know, look at you. Doesn't matter where you're from. I treat you as a human being. You know, I had it one day, and if I may share this with you quickly, guys. One day I was in Paris, in France. You know, I went over to Louvre Museum.
Mm-hmm.
Louvre Museum, you all know, I'm sure you know Louvre. I always, anytime I go to Paris, I used to go to Louvre Museum to see what the latest paintings.
Oh.
And my family informed me that, hey, they just put a new painting in Louvre. You might want to go check it out. It was by Delacroix. Delacroix was a painter from the 18th century. So, and I went over there, and I didn't know which section. Louvre is big. So I
oh,
went
it's
to
huge.
I went to the front desk. And I told the lady, the assistant desk, excuse me, ma'am, would you please tell me where the section for the locker was? She said, well, just go up there and make a left. Well, which left and where and all that? Her colleague told her in French, she said, well, you told him the wrong direction. And she responded by saying, he's like those dumb Americans, he'll find his way. She didn't realize that I know French and I speak French. And it really upsets me, and I kind of lost it with her in the sense that you can't be treating someone like that. Doesn't matter where I'm from. You know, just look at me as an individual, as a human being. Because I said, after all, if it weren't for the Americans, you'll be speaking German. So, and knowing history, my point is, how about if we just look at individuals as a human being, regardless of ethnicity, regardless of citizen, regardless of religious views, regardless of political orientation, whatever. Treat them as a human being.
Absolutely right.
So that's usually what I see. All this is going. So.
Oh, help me with the pronunciation.
Let's say this one here. Oh, Dan Zui, De Campo. Good to see you here.
How long do you think the government is going to lie about inflation?
That is
well. It. When the sun stops shining,
yeah.
Until the people go out on the streets and demonstrate,
that is an interesting. It's not a laughing matter. You know, we're not laughing because it's funny. We're laughing because it is sad. I speak for myself again.
Yeah, and I completely agree.
Yeah, it's the sad part. My fear is if this, that's how it starts. You start by the small lies and go. Australia is going the same route. They started the same route.
Yeah.
By little and little, not telling their citizens what's going on. Nobody knew about the submarine deal, whatever, the AUKUS and all that. And all of a sudden, because the Prime Minister, Morrison, at the time, start lying little by little. I am noticing, yeah, the U.S. has always been that way. Anyway, but now it's getting more and more. Why would you lie to American people about inflation rather than telling them, hey, we want the president. This is where you hold the president accountable. You know better than anybody else just because you're the president. You know, everybody's equal under the law. You know, you can on a screen address the nation and say, Americans, our inflation is going up and here is why.
Instead, what we see is major news outlets are saying, oh, this small amount of inflation is irrelevant. Hey, if you live in paycheck to paycheck, it's not irrelevant.
Or blaming the citizens for the inflation. Like what the secretary, the press saying that, you know, well, they don't have to select the colors of the jacket. Who are you to dictate to the American people what to buy and not to buy? And plus, it ain't your business to begin with. It is the role of the government.
Let's blame the victim.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. That's a good idea.
Yeah. And that is where the issue, that's where my big concern, if the government's going that route, until Americans wake up to this reality, you know, going out in the peaceful demonstrations, whatever, I don't know. Because it appeared to me that most Americans are numb to what's going on. Because they are so busy with their phones and the idiot box and they being distracted.
And the distraction and the major news outlets are run by who? The people who have something to gain from not for the American people though. Yeah.
Well, you look at it like this shipping issue.
Oh yeah.
You know the owners of the shipping companies, you know how much money they made, billions of dollars in profit. And yet an average citizen is suffering because he or she does not know, will I have enough money to go buy dinner tonight? Will I have enough money to go buy medication? Will I have enough to buy a coat for my kid because it's getting cold? You know, this is where, the government ought to be honest with its people. It's a problem. Like a family, when you have a family, we all have problems inside the family. What do? You keep lying to your family members? No, you tell them, here is the problem. How are we going to go about solving it? That's usually what it is.
And we have no national resolve that says, let's take care of the American people first. In Russia, they certainly have that as a priority. In China, they certainly have it as a priority. And other places, but not here. You just don't hear it.
And you want the answer, Oz, because our system is corrupted. Let's just say it for what it is.
We're not going to
sugarcoat it. It's corrupted, and it's about time for Americans to understand that the government is for the people, by the people. Till they understand the tenet of that concept, nothing will change. Till they understand that. So.
And one last thing I want to bring up. China and Russia are not perfect.
And of course. Yeah, China and Russia is not perfect. You're absolutely correct, Elizabeth. They are not. No system is perfect on earth. As a matter of fact, China has its own problems. They're dealing with, I am sure there are issues there,
More issues than, let's just leave it at, every country has very significant issues. We're not saying that China's glorious Russia's glorious.
No.
What we're saying is, let's do a comparison as to at least what the politicians are saying.
Yeah. And I am sure that the ruling party in China, they're going to be facing some challenges moving forward when a presidency next year or next term, whatever that is going to start. They have their own domestic issues they deal with.
Oh.
But overall, you look at the welfare of the people, and that's where you realize the role of the government. It exists there for the people, by the people, regardless whatever system you are using. As long as the interest of the people takes precedent.
Right.
That's usually what it is. We have one more question. Let's see the next. Oh, Homeversity.
Thank you very much
for your sticker, with super sticker rather. We truly, truly appreciate it. So do we have time for one more question?
No.
No, we don't, because it's about time to
read what he said.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hopefully someday in the future, this Earth will be like Star Trek.
The next generation.
The next generation.
Time. I'm a big fan of Star Trek.
So, then you're going to have a conversation with Elizabeth about this one. So, you know, I do believe, just to comment on this, we have a few more minutes. I do believe, literally, like one quote we did say one time, you know, we don't inherit the earth from our ancestors, but from our children. So if we couldn't live or coexist peacefully on earth, you know, come on, you know, there is something out there. I mean, we can't be the only intelligent life in the universe. That will be very arrogant of us to be thinking that, you know. I mean, but at the same time, we are given this opportunity to exist here. Let's make the best out of it. Let's make the best out of it.
So help us by subscribing. Help us by becoming members. Let's get the message out there that there is hope for this and that people can communicate and resolve issues.
Indeed, it's very, very important. So your support, guys, is very, very important to us. Remember to follow us on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter, both of us, under D. Waralu and Alchemy.
Alchemy of E. It's on.
Yeah, there's the
and David is D. Waralu.
Yeah, those are the last. Make sure you follow us on those. And also, guys, spread the word about our channel, because we need to grow. As I said earlier, we had almost 1 million views in the last 26 days. And yet, we need to be reaching a certain level, but it is what it is. So we thank you for your support, and we look forward to seeing you next Friday. Till next time.
1 week. Bye now.
As always, stay informed. Till next time. Bye-bye.